Think about the kinds of car and truck sounds our grandchildren's kids might make. We grew up making all those motor sounds as kids when we played with toy cars and trucks. You know, heavy motor sounds, brrr, as made by gas and diesel cars and trucks. When kids play with a toy Prius or Leaf, do they make the same sounds? Hybrids and straight electric vehicles continue to grow in number on our roads, and organizations like Drive Oregon work to make sure they continue to grow. We have two guests in the studio today to talk about electric vehicles in the state of Oregon and their growth. Jeff Allen is the executive director of Drive Oregon here with me. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
And also with us is Richard Chuck, who's the vice president of operations at Alltrax in Grants Pass, which makes parts for electric vehicles. Richard, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
So, Jeff, let's start with you. Tell us about Drive Oregon. What is it and how did it get started?
Yeah, Drive Oregon is a nonprofit. We're basically a trade association for the electric vehicle industry, but we're funded in large part by the state of Oregon through lottery dollars as part of the state's economic development strategy. So really our charge from the state is to accelerate the growth of the electric vehicle industry, the whole supply chain, everything from software and motor controllers and wires and cables all the way up to complete vehicles. And then we also work to advance the deployment of vehicles, so get more cars on the road, more electric vehicles on the road, and more chargers installed.
So before there was a Drive Oregon, was there much in the way of an industry in either finished vehicles or parts for vehicles in the state of Oregon?
Well, I mean, that's part of what's so fun about this is it's all pretty new. Some of it's also very old. You know, we were talking before the show about some of the earliest cars 100 years ago were electric. Also, some of the companies in this space in Oregon hark back to Second World War. Not the kind of vehicles you think about, maybe, but, for example, electric forklifts were more or less invented here in Oregon. We still have a big industry making those. We have the only company that makes electric streetcars, and that was founded around World War II as well. So we have roots in this kind of equipment, but the modern electric vehicle really dates back, the Nissan Leaf's only been sold for about 3 years now. So it's pretty exciting, pretty rapidly changing industry.
So does Drive Oregon support just straight electric vehicles and that industry, or are you also involved in the hybrids as well?
We work some with hybrids, with fuel cell vehicles as well, and also kind of shading into some of the connections between the vehicles. Part of what's happening that's also very exciting as these vehicles become more like computers with wheels than they are like cars with electronics is that those computers are also connected. And if you've been following the buzz about the Internet of Things, that's coming to cars in a big way. So we also get involved in the space where cars are talking to one another and to the infrastructure, and I'm sure to the NSA as well. But there's lots of good things you can do with that data.
Well, I want to come back to what sorts of things the cars are saying to each other, but I want to bring Richard Chuck in on the conversation here, Vice President of Operations at Alltrax. What do you make at Alltrax?
We make motor controllers for the electric vehicles. We do the smaller ones, not for full-size cars like the Leafs or anything like that. They're mostly in the 2 to 40 horsepower range. So golf cars, forklifts, motorcycles, boats, lawnmowers.
And a controller is essentially the gas pedal for an electric vehicle?
You would call it the basically like a carburetor for a gas car. It translates what you want to do into motor motion.
All right. So you push it and you get the results and it can. Yeah, controllers actually is technology that's been around for a very long time, hasn't it?
Yeah. There's been controllers around for at least 100 years. Just recently in the last 20 years, the components have gotten much better to make them smaller and more efficient. And even in the last 5 years, there's been huge leaps in efficiency of some of the transistors and the microchips are just unbelievable anymore.
I was going to ask you if microprocessors are involved, because it seems like the earliest controllers, things like on trolley cars in the late 19th century, would have been pretty simple windings of copper and something sliding across them or something. But so now you got all the modern technology and chips and everything.
Yeah. Back in the day, it used to be just solenoids and relays, just turning stuff on and off to adjust your speed. And now with these ARM chips that are out, these things are computers, and just flat out computers the size of a postage stamp. And they've totally changed how motor controllers are made and operated and what you can do with them.
And why specialize at Alltrax in the smaller kinds of controllers or for smaller horsepower? I mean, is it just a harder niche to break into to try to get into the full-sized, higher-speed electric cars?
Yeah. Alltrax originally it started as a company that was doing motor controllers for full-size cars, and that was really a niche market at least 15 years ago when we started it. The smaller market, there's plenty of stuff. Our big business right now is actually golf cars, and that's 75% of our business.
Let's talk to Jeff Allen again about Drive Oregon and the basic picture here. Is the state of Oregon unusual in its support for electric cars and electric vehicles?
It is. I mean, you might expect Oregon is always kind of had built a reputation as being a green state and very focused on clean technology, but also having a great early adopter market for these kinds of things. We were ahead of the curve in adopting hybrid cars. Same thing with electric cars. So we're, depending on whose numbers you believe, we're definitely one of the top five per capita markets for electric cars. We're definitely one of the top five markets in terms of charging stations per capita. And in particular, if you look at the really fast chargers that'll charge up your car in 20 minutes or less, we have 60 of those operating in Oregon. Last I checked, the entire state of California had about 20. So we're really out in front on the deployment side. But we're also pretty unique in trying to seize the economic development opportunities here. Other than, you know, place like Detroit, there hasn't been as much attention on that. But we see a real opportunity, again, because Oregon has this. We're not going to rival Detroit. We're not trying to make complete cars here necessarily, but we have this history in transportation equipment, and then we know a few things about electronics and components and software. So there's some real opportunities in that supply chain for us.
Right, that's a logical question then about how aggressive Oregon wants to be, and it sounds like you're satisfied to figure out where the good niche is and not work really hard to bring a factory from some other state or something to construct entire Leafs or something.
Yeah, well, personally, I've always been kind of skeptical of that economic development approach where you're going to go club a big company over the head and drag it back to your cave. And because if you can lure a company to Oregon, somebody else can lure it somewhere else. But we have lured some folks, and Brammo is a great example. They're here in the southern Rogue Valley really quite simply because they wanted to live here. There's no logical reason for them to be here. But now that they're here, we want to keep them here and help them grow. And I think the opportunities in Oregon are mostly around, as I said, kind of the heavy industrial equipment, the lighter vehicles like motorcycles and electric assist bicycles and three-wheeled vehicles, even one-wheeled vehicles. And then in the components, motor controllers, wires, cable harnesses, software.
Okay, I got to go back to one-wheeled vehicles.
Yeah, I thought that might get your attention. we've actually been working with one of our members, a company called Rhino, that was just on the Today Show this week and has been getting a lot of press. They make a one-wheeled self-balancing microcycle, is what they're calling it. It's basically a Segway competitor.
There's a picture at the Drive Oregon website, isn't there?
There is at driveoregon.org. There's a picture and a profile of that company. They're taking pre-orders now. In fact, their website just crashed, I understand, after they were on the Today Show and New York Times. But it's a fascinating vehicle. Like I say, it goes about 10 miles an hour. It's really designed for kind of places where you would use a Segway, but a lot more fun and a lot cooler than a Segway.
Wow. We'll talk much more about electric vehicles, and you can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange. Jeff Allen and Richard Chuck, our guests. Jeff is the executive director at Drive Oregon. Richard is the vice president of operations at AllTrax in Grants Pass, which makes smaller electric vehicle controllers. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. What are your thoughts about electric vehicles? Do you own one? Are you considering getting one? If so, or if not, what are the incentives? What are the obstacles? Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Richard, it sounds like you're capable of riffing just a little bit on some of the history of electric vehicles. Just before we put the microphones on live, we were talking about some of the earlier electric cars, which is something useful to remember. In the early days of automobiles, when there still were lots of name brands out there, the first quarter of the 20th century, some of those vehicles, well, there was the Stanley Steamer, for one thing. Mm-hmm. In addition to the gas cars, there were some other distillate-powered cars, I guess. But there were some straight electrics, weren't there?
Yeah, there were quite a few straight electrics. You know, depending on where you look, you can find information going back to 1880, where, you know, supposedly the first horseless carriage in New York was an electric. Henry Ford's wife drove an Edison. She refused to drive one of her husband's cars, so she drove an electric for years. And, you know, they go back. I was telling you about that one book I found from 1903 that had information on electric vehicles, how you build it, how the electronics work. And it even had a diagram in there for a diesel hybrid.
A diesel hybrid in 1903?
Yep.
Really? Mm-hmm. Is anything like that in existence now? Is there a diesel hybrid?
There's a couple. I think they're using them on, like, semis, on the semi-cabs. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of innovation again in this space. I know Volkswagen has just come out with their first electrics, and I should know this, but I'm not sure if they're diesel hybrid. But we also have a member that's actually making a electric hydraulic hybrid motor, which is also a fascinating. And I'd have to turn to Rich to explain how it works. But
I'm not quite sure how that one works.
Basically, as I understand it, the hydraulics are used for start-stop and are very efficient at getting you moving and at recapturing the energy from the braking. And then electric is best for operating kind of at speed. So once you're up to speed, it's very efficient, but it's not very efficient getting started.
So the hydraulics take care of the inertia. Yeah.
That's right.
And everything else is handled by the electric part.
Yep.
Jeff Allen again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange with Richard Chuck. Let's take some phone calls. We have Grumpy John and Grants Pass up on the Exchange. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks. You know, I was just going to let it alone, but his comment that his major business is supplying components for golf carts just pushed me over the edge. That is an industry that is ravaging our environment. To put golf courses in deserts, to use lawns instead of vegetable producing.
All right, so the point is that you're putting these big green spaces in places where there's probably not a lot of water.
But it goes beyond that. That's just an analogy. Mm-hmm. You know, when you factor in the loss of power in transmission lines and the pollution that our current way of making electricity is figured in, we are buying these cars for these people because of some wish that it's actually clean, and I'm saying it is not. And I think that the actual figures should be exposed rather than saying, yeah, we're going to put we're paying for high-speed charging outlets all over the place. This is not a renewable resource. This is a road down a path that we are supporting, and that's the only reason that it's currently viable. We need to get off of this support for ideas and get to the reality of where does this energy come from and who is actually paying for it.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Grumpy John. Let's take this in turns. I want to go to Richard first, though, because he talked first about the golf carts, and you make controllers for golf carts. How mm-hmm. big a part of your business is that?
It's about 75% of our business.
Really? That much?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, to his point, he does have a point. I mean, electric vehicles, whether it's a golf car or anything else, it's not a zero-sum game. You're not, just because there is an electric vehicle doesn't mean you've eliminated any pollution with it. You've just reduced it because you're not actually outputting anything. Now, you know, you got coal plants and other types of ways to manufacture electricity that put out pollution, but you're not getting that in conjunction with what the vehicle puts out. So it doesn't eliminate it completely. It just reduces it.
Well, it moves it, I think, is one of the complaints that people make, is that, okay, so you're not burning a fossil fuel with this vehicle, but somewhere a fossil fuel is being burned to power this. And I'm sure you hear this a lot, Jeff Allen.
I do, especially in Oregon. And that's part of why I love doing this in Oregon. You know, I should probably be more politic about this, but I sometimes think there's places in this country, maybe to the south of us, where they want electric cars because they want to be able to continue to screw up their land use and everything else and just, you know, drive 40 miles each way to work and not worry about it. But in Oregon, I could say we're really looking at electric cars because we've already done a pretty decent job with land use and transit and bike facilities, and this is one more thing we need to do to deal with global warming. But leaving all that aside, there's actually a lot of data out there about what is the net impact on electric vehicles. And don't believe me, because I'm an industry guy, but Union of Concerned Scientists and Sierra Club have done a lot of work on this. And what they found basically is there is nowhere in the country where electric cars are not cleaner than gas cars in terms of global warming. Hands down, they're cleaner in terms of smog pollution. They basically eliminate the pollution that causes smog, and which is a huge problem in the Rogue Valley. In terms of global warming, you've got to look at the whole life cycle, energy production, production of the batteries, production of the cars. But even when you look at that whole life cycle compared to a gas car, electrics are somewhere between 20 to 60% or more reduction in CO2 emissions. And in most of Oregon, it's closer to 60% because we have a lot of power from hydro and natural gas and wind and solar. But the other thing about electrics is the grid is getting cleaner every year, which is not true for gas cars or for oil production. And the other thing that's true about electrics, if you're really concerned about this, is you can put solar panels on your roof and power your electric car off of those solar panels. So you have a lot more options with an electric car. But even just buying an electric car and plugging it in, even in the dirtiest grid in the United States, is still an improvement over a gas car.
When you were talking about considering the whole life cycle of the vehicle, this gets back to the oft-repeated statement that there's a bigger carbon footprint to construct a Toyota Prius than there is for an SUV. But here again, isn't the point that is eventually made is that over the life cycle of that vehicle, the Prius is going to use a lot less resources?
Correct. Yeah. Now, I think also that some of those things that get circulated online about, you know, the Hummer is better than the Prius have been pretty well debunked. But really, I think the two messages you're hearing here is there is no free lunch. That's absolutely true. But switching to electric vehicle is a huge improvement. And if we can reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 20 to 60%, that's huge. We still also need to walk more and bike more and use more transit, and we need all those other things as well, but it is a dramatic step forward.
Richard Chuck, I haven't asked you if Alltrax, the company for which you are vice president of operations, used to make any sorts of parts for vehicles that actually do burn fossil fuels, or if it's always been electric vehicles.
It's always been electric. We've had a couple of our customers make hybrids with our stuff, but that's not been our primary focus.
It's not something you make in the factory?
No.
Okay. And how many people do you employ at Alltrax?
We've got 20 people. Mm-hmm. And we do everything in-house. We make all the electronics and test them, and we've got in-house support staff.
Any manufacture or assembly that takes place elsewhere? I mean, you
nope.
bring in no?
No, we do all of it. We do as much of it as we can in-house. You know, some of the parts, metal enclosures and stuff like that, we bring in, but we try to keep that local. We have places in Medford and Portland that supply most of our sheet metal and metal objects.
All right. You can join this discussion about electric vehicles in the state of Oregon and their promotion with Drive Oregon. Jeff Allen's the executive director of that. Richard Chuck, whose voice you just heard, is the vice president of operations at Alltrax in Grants Pass. It makes controllers for smaller electric vehicles. Our phone number is on the exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. John in Veneta, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning, Jeff and Richard.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I didn't miss something here because I've kind of been in and out of this the conversation. But there's been two different times on this very channel I'm listening to where they profess, and one of them was a scientist at MIT, and they had conquered the answer for hydrogen, and it went away. Yesterday, I heard on the news, and I believe it was on this channel, about a new battery that's made out of starches and sugars that's supposed to be a huge, huge quantum leap above anything that we have now. And I was wondering what the guests know about this, and if they would please follow up and lock onto like a Pitbull and don't let go.
A starch battery, is that what you said?
It's a battery, but it's made completely different. It's cheap. It's completely harmless to the environment. It just sounded like heaven.
All right, let's explore
that. It's supposed to not be an if. It's supposed to be a done deal, just like those two hydrogen shows have.
All right. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it. And thanks for listening to JPR as closely as you do. Jeff Allen, anything you know about this starch battery?
I have not heard about the starch battery, although there's a lot of research in this area and a lot of people working for what's the next. I mean, the lithium-ion batteries that we use now are getting better and cheaper every year, 10% plus drop in price. So there's people working at that, and there are people working on kind of what's the disruptive battery technology. Just like there are people working on hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. I mean, the main problem with those is the infrastructure is even more difficult and expensive and has to be built out from scratch, even much more than charging electric vehicles. So, I heard one of my colleagues say it's that fuel cell vehicles are the technology of the future and they always will be. I'm not sure I'm that pessimistic, but I think it's still 10, 15 years out.
Let's talk about for practical purposes, trying to travel around the state of Oregon. You're based in Salem or Portland?
Portland.
Okay, so how did you make the trip here for the Rogue Valley?
Well, I got to confess, part of it is I used to live here. I was here for 5 years before I moved up to do this. So we are working really hard to not be one of those statewide initiatives that spans the state all the way from, you know, Vancouver to Tualatin. And then there is a cluster of companies down here that we work with. Rich is actually one of our board members. Brammo is one of our members down here. The other thing is that Rogue Valley is actually one of the best markets for these vehicles in the state. When I talk to people in other places, they kind of assume, even the car makers sometimes assume it's all Portland. But it's not. It's really the western suburbs of Portland, Hillsboro, Beaverton, et cetera. It's Corvallis area. And it's the Rogue Valley. And if you think about it, the Rogue Valley is the perfect kind of commute shed for electric vehicles. The Leaf has a range of about 75 miles. That'll get you from Grants Pass to Medford or Ashland, or between Medford and Ashland during the day.
And you won't get stuck in traffic as much as you would in Portland.
Yeah, exactly. And if you live in Portland proper, you know, you've got better transit options. You've got better bike options. So you don't really it's harder to make an electric vehicle pencil if you're only driving 5 miles a day.
So what vehicle did you arrive in the Rogue Valley in?
An airplane, actually. but my friends at Lithia Nissan in Medford were kind enough to lend me a Leaf. So I've been tooling around the valley in that for the last day or two.
All right, we got a couple calls on the line. I want you to stay there because we are going to come back and continue our discussion about electric vehicles in the state of Oregon. Jeff Allen's the executive director of Drive Oregon, the nonprofit that is set up to boost the electric vehicle industry in the state. Richard Chuck works in that industry making controllers. He's the vice president of operations at AllTracks in Grants Pass. Stay on the line or call in when we're back from the break on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. Back in a minute 20. Thirty-six on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. You can find us not just on the radio, but also on the web at jeffexchange.org. You'll find program topics, recordings, and a look ahead to future editions of the Jefferson Exchange. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, and you can take part in our conversations as they happen. Our electric vehicle discussion will continue, and I'll let you know that Garrison Keillor will be at the back end of the hour, so a few minutes away from us still. Join us on the Exchange to talk about electric vehicles in the state of Oregon and the support they get from Drive Oregon. Jeff Allen's the executive director. Richard Chuck is on the board of Drive Oregon and the vice president of operations at AllTracks, which makes electric vehicle controllers. Our phone number is 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area, and the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, and our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Jamie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jeff and Richard. Jamie, go ahead.
What?
Go ahead. Jamie, go ahead. Huh? Not going to take Jamie. Let's go to John in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
So I was curious. One of the early electric vehicles was actually boats. The Elko Boat Company in the 1865 exposition in Chicago transported roughly 100,000 people around the exposition. And they are still in business and are, at this point, one of the most tech-savvy motor and controller suppliers out there. And I wondered if any of you had dabbled in any of the boating end of electric vehicle.
All right, let's find out. Everybody's pointing at Richard, so he can take that one.
Elko is, you know, I've heard of Elko. I actually haven't dealt with them. But, we do actually have a couple customers down in California that do electric boats. There's Duffy Boats down in, I want to say, Los Angeles. And they make small, like 6-7-person tour boats. And then there's another company called Lear Baylor, which makes something that looks like a cigarette boat. They're a little bit more high performance, and the Lear name is actually the daughter of the guy who founded the Lear Aircraft Company is the one doing it. There's also a lot of hobbyists who are doing it, and partially that has to do with a lot of local regulations, like down in California and in Oregon, where they're starting to not allow gas engines on boats on lakes and rivers anymore. So a lot of people are switching over to that, and it's a rapidly growing business.
You mentioned that Alltrax is about 20 people. I mean, are you at about the level you can handle? Are you thinking about growth in the future? Are you working toward growth? Are you pretty much feeling you're sustainable at this level?
No, we're planning growth. We've got a bunch of new products coming out this year, and we're going to make a big push with these new technology that we've been leveraging with the, you know, with the ARM chips and these high efficiency transistors, to hopefully double our business by the end of next year.
Okay, second reference to the ARM chips. What does the ARM stand for?
Oh.
Oops, it's an acronym.
It is.
Nobody can remember what
it
stands
for. I don't remember what it is. It's everybody who has a smartphone has one of these in their smartphone. It's what drives smartphones, and they're miniature computers. They're really the size of a postage stamp, and they're equivalent to a Pentium 2 computer from about 10 years ago.
Wow. It's amazing how much smaller things get over time and wieldy. Mm-hmm. So, Jeff Allen, the reference you made earlier to the cars being able to talk to each other, that the Internet of Things, as you referenced it, what are our cars going to say to each other?
Yeah, well, we'll see what kind of calls this brings in. But, no, it's a really hot area. Some of you have probably heard about the Google autonomous self-driving car. That's kind of the science fiction end-of-the-line picture where the cars could actually drive themselves around. But you're starting to see things short of that already. Some of the self-correcting lane correction technology, where if you start to drift out of your lane, the handlebar will, it can have a virtual rumble strip. Some of the cars can talk to each other and send information about, for example, if there's a traffic jam up ahead. One of my personal favorite examples is you're increasingly seeing start-stop technology. It's kind of sometimes called a mild hybrid, where the car will automatically turn itself off if you stop at a stoplight and turn itself back on. Well, one of the German automakers has gone a step further, and they can actually read the signals from the traffic lights and turn the car back on just before the light turns green.
So the traffic lights are communicating to the car?
Yes.
Wow.
And then the next step of that is that if you have a cruise control on, for example, they have what they call adaptive cruise control. It'll read those signals and automatically slow you down or speed you up slightly so that you hit the green lights rather than just missing one.
Wow.
So there's lots of things happening in the space. And then the whole infotainment, as they call it, the little screens that are increasingly in the cars that can not only show movies and things like that, but increasingly have mapping apps and other kind of applications that can, you know, hopefully not be used by the driver but by passengers in the car.
All right, let's take some more calls here. Let's go to Alan in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking electric cars with Jeff Allen and Richard Chuck. Alan, go ahead.
Jeff Allen DeBoer, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Good to talk to you, and good to see you back in Ashland, and say hi to Martha.
Thank you.
Let me see. I'm currently driving a Volt. I've got 7,300 miles on it, on 11 gallons of gas, and it's absolutely a fantastic car.
And you sell them, of course, through one of your dealerships, right?
I do at TC Chevy, and we sell the Spark, which is, I think, the number one rated electric vehicle and top safety pick. But the reason I called you, I had a Tesla customer come in, because we have chargers at work that are free for anybody to pull in and charge, and that's an invite to anybody, whether it's any kind of electric car. But he went to the Ashland charging stations, and they weren't working properly, and the cost was equivalent to about $9 a gallon. And he was pretty disgruntled, so he came down, and we charged his car for free. But I don't know if anybody's doing research on how much electricity is actually being used and how the new company is that Blink went bankrupt, how much tax subsidies and all that. It seemed pretty unusable for somebody to use them.
All right, good points to bring up. Thanks for that, Alan.
Lots of good points there. So one of the things that's a challenge about charging is people always ask, well, who's paying for that? The cost to charge, say, a Nissan Leaf that's all battery electric from zero to full, basically fill the tank, the cost of that electricity is about $2. So part of the problem we have is you can't charge people enough for the power to pay for the infrastructure. It's a really hard business model. So that's part of why you've seen a lot of companies that have tried to provide public charging go bankrupt, because it's a tough business model. And the biggest was Blink, which built or Ecotality, which built the Blink network and a bunch of the chargers down here are Blink chargers. Those have been bought out now by a company called the Car Charging Group, based in Florida. And actually, their VP is going to be in Portland in a couple of weeks, and we plan to have some meetings with him about what their plans are. My understanding is that they've done a reasonable job of maintaining those stations so far, but I think they're still struggling with the pricing structure and how are they going to do that. So it's an ongoing challenge, and basically what we're seeing is the model for charging. It's probably going to be a lot like Wi-Fi. That you'll have businesses that will provide free charging as a way to a service to their customers, just like you provide, you know, free Wi-Fi or
220 ounce lattes gets you a free charge or something.
Yeah, exactly. You're seeing a lot of the help me out here. The drugstores,
the Walgreens.
Walgreens are putting in a lot of chargers because, you know, people at this point who are driving electric cars tend to be fairly affluent, and they're also very loyal. They like to shop at places that let them charge.
Which brings up this email from Joe in Talent, who says, I love the concept of electric cars, but I doubt they'll ever be affordable for mass consumption. They've evolved into a niche product that only the well-to-do can afford, while the rest of us are forced to continue to use cars that spit out greenhouse gases. I think the only way this will work is if the government gets into the business of manufacturing electric and hydrogen vehicles in numbers that force the price down so we can realize the benefit of the technology. As long as we rely on the market to make decisions for us, the market will always fall on the side of making fewer units at a higher cost. Battery prices fall every year, but we see a continuing increase in the price of the vehicles. That again from Joe and Talent.
Hmm. Well, actually, the vehicles have been getting cheaper. The Nissan Leaf and the Volt have both had price reductions in the last year or two. And, you know, there are now 11 electric car models available that cost less than the median new car price. The most extreme example is the Smart Electric Drive, which I think is $25,000 or so before the tax credit. And there's a federal tax credit of $7,500. That brings it down to about $18,000. The biggest problem we have is that new cars are expensive, and most people don't buy new cars as a regular thing. Something like 80% of new cars are bought by 20% of the population. Mm-hmm. So part of the problem we have is until there's more of these cars being sold in the used market, that's going to be a challenge. And it's also like any new technology and a lot of clean technologies that it does start with the folks who have the discretionary income. It's I remember when FSC certified wood first came out, and the first places you see that are in kitchens of new trophy homes. And then gradually it becomes more available and the price comes down and it becomes more realistic for a broader range of people.
Yeah, there's so many kinds of technology you can think of that were the first one that came out. You know, your friend bought it. It was like, well, this cost me $500 and I can play one CD at a time. And, right. You know, within 3 years, you could buy one thing that plays five discs for $100. It just kind of flops things around. Let's take another call. Let's go to Cynthia in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jeff Allen from Drive Oregon and Richard Chuck from AllTrax.
Yeah, a friend of mine has solar panels on his roof and an electric scooter. So he loves to tell people when he scoots around on that in the summer that it's a solar-powered scooter. And I'm just wondering if there's any research being done on having cars have an actual solar panel in the roof as a way to add to the charge.
Let's find out about that. Thanks for the call, Cynthia. Appreciate that. Jeff, what do you know?
Yeah, there are some that do that. It's not enough real estate on the roof of the car.
You need a roof about six times the size of the car, wouldn't you?
Exactly. Yeah. So what they have done, I know, on some of the cars is have a solar panel that runs internal ventilation, for example, which can actually make a big difference because you can use a lot of power just bringing your car temperature, either running the heater or the air conditioner to bring it to comfortable temperature to get into it. So there's some of that. Probably the most exciting thing in this space, Ford has really jumped ahead into the electric vehicle and hybrid space, and they just unveiled, I think it was called the Solar Energy. They have a C-Max Energy, which is a plug-in hybrid, but they unveiled at the show recently a concept car that basically is charged by the sun, parks under a solar canopy, so it's not the roof of the car, but they have a concentrating solar array on the top of the garage. And then the car, again, uses some of this autonomous technology, so it actually moves around a little bit inside the garage so that the concentrated solar hits it right on top of the roof and the collector. So it doesn't have a plug to charge. It just charges in this concentrated solar canopy. So there is some really interesting stuff happening in this space.
Let's take another call. We have Brad in Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jeff Allen and Richard Chuck. We're talking electric vehicles.
Thanks for a wonderful show. It's great questions coming in and great answers for them. I'm a big enthusiast of the electric, the change to electric vehicles. I'm glad Jeff Merkley, our senator, is big on that too. I'm a proponent of what I call the around town car. We're trying to create cars that replicate our existing cars. Our existing cars can haul six people and pull a boat over the mountain, but we don't usually use that. We only go to the store and get milk, and we don't need to haul a 4,000-pound vehicle to do that. So scooters, like the lady called in, and somebody's driving a scooter on sunlight, basically, off of this rooftop, that's enormously exciting because we could expand our solar panels to our entire rooftop or create roofing that is a solar collector and charge our vehicles and then drive around town with a small, lightweight car that we use for that, and then we still keep our other car, which doesn't wear out so fast, for those long trips when we have to drive across country. So I'm very, very happy about that, and I'm even hoping that the people that rig controllers for the golf carts could consider another niche market here for people who buy second cars that are dedicated for around town. They go slow, and they weigh less, and they take up less space.
Okay, Brad, thanks for the thoughts.
Thanks.
All right, take it easy. So, Richard, is that something you would consider at All Tracks to get into a small car sort of model and then a round town car?
Yeah, we actually have. They're called LSVs, low-speed vehicles. I know here in Oregon you can drive 35 miles an hour in an electric on secondary roads. So there's a lot of people doing that. Golf cars, you can actually get turn signals and brake light kits and get them DOT certified in Oregon to drive on secondary roads. That's where we're actually hoping to take the business, is in this low speed, you know, sub 45 mile an hour range. And that's really where it's going to be. The caller was absolutely correct. You know, for 15 years, you know, we've been trying to convince people that you don't need the electric car that we're talking about. Doesn't replace your normal car. This is your around town car. Because for me, I drive 10 miles to work, you know, one way, and then I run to the store. So any given day, I may be put in 25 miles. And you'll find most people, that's the exact same way. And in my house, I have my truck, I have a fuel-efficient car, I have a Honda, and then my fiance has a Kia. And we break the truck out when we need to, otherwise we're driving the fuel-efficient cars.
All right. It looks like it's going to be the final call of the hour. Let's go to Don and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking electric vehicles.
I have two questions. The first one is about the possibility of building electric rear axles for existing front-wheel drive cars. It seems like the Audi E3, I think it is, and the new BMW both have this feature of having a gas-powered or diesel-powered front axle and then an electric-powered rear axle, and with the option of four-wheel drive if you need it. But that would be kind of like a Volt vehicle, which is, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a plug-in hybrid which mm-hmm. runs on either gas or electricity, or both. And it would be simple to manufacture. All you would have to do is to engineer the replacement axle for your Honda, your front-wheel drive Honda, that is powered by a battery pack, and you could turn that on around town and use the gas power for intercity right. stuff. And the second question is about gallium aluminum alloys used as a source of hydrogen, if you've heard about that, the work at Purdue.
Okay, let's find out. Thanks for the call, Don. Appreciate it. Everybody's, you know, Richard gets the point that
this is what happens when you're the technical guy. The rear axle, you know, that's actually a really good idea. I've heard that a couple times, and I know some of the cars do have a system like that. A lot of the start-stop assist systems will use something like that. As far as having retrofit kits, probably easier said than done, but I don't think it's impossible.
Jeff, I think you've talked about this before, mm-hmm. though, that this could be expensive to do a retrofit on an existing vehicle. And at this point, the economics just don't quite work out.
Yeah, I think it seems to me that the there are some markets for people doing retrofits and kit cars and things like that, but it's becoming increasingly difficult as the big automakers move into this space. You know, if you can buy even those neighborhood vehicles, if you can buy a smart two-seater car that's meets all the federal safety standards and can go highway speeds for $15,000, or you can buy a neighborhood kit car that doesn't meet the safety standards and maxes at 35 and it costs you 10. There's not a lot of space there.
All right. Thanks for a lively discussion on electric vehicles. Jeff Allen is the executive director of Drive Oregon. Richard Chuck is on the board of Drive Oregon and the vice president of operations at Alltrax, Inc. in Grants Pass. Thank you both for joining us today in the Exchange.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
And as promised, here's Garrison Keillor.